Language, integration, and politics. The three are colliding in Austria, where Sebastian Kurz, Minister for Integration and Foreign Affairs, has proposed offering migrants jobs that pay only 1 euro an hour until they learn how to speak German. 1 euro, by the way, is about $1.13. So should governments enforce language standards, especially one language standards? And can immigrants ever fully integrate if they don't learn the majority language of their new country? These are long-running questions that are taking on a new significance. Well, Mairead Nick-Krath is an anthropologist and chair in European culture and heritage at Harriet Watt University in Edinburgh, Scotland. She joins us. And first of all, what do you think about the Austrian official's suggestion?
I understand where it's coming from. It's coming from this perceived need that migrants need to learn the language of the state. But I don't agree with it because there are so many things that come into play in learning a language. And it also implies that the language skill is essential to a job, which is not always the case today.
Mm. Well, so the language skill may not be essential to a job.
No.
And particularly perhaps the kinds of jobs that they're referring to, 1 hour and 1 euro an hour serving food. One would question how much German they do need to know in the camps. But Austrian officials are saying that in order to fully integrate or assimilate into Austrian culture, learning language is a key part of that.
Yes. That is not so unusual, really. I mean, this instance happens to be Austria, but it's very much based on a 19th century model where many countries in Europe and France and Germany went down the route of one language, one nation. And this idea that your marker of belonging was the language you spoke. I mean, they interpret it slightly differently, but the idea was that a group within particular boundaries would speak the same language, and that somehow or other speaking the same language meant they had the same values, they had the same customs, they had the same cultures, and that they would be cohesive in a way that would be effective in the world. I mean, I think that's a model that's changing nowadays with migration and with movement that has increased so much in the 20th and 21st century. I think that model no longer holds, but it certainly was there for a long time.
But let me press you on this a little bit, because I take your point about the history behind this thinking.
Yeah.
But that also involved one language. Whereas, I mean, isn't it possible here that Sebastian Kurz in Austria is suggesting that, you know, we're not saying that you speak German exclusively, but that you learn German alongside your native tongue?
Yes. But I think my problem with that kind of model is there is somehow an implication that no matter how many languages you speak, unless you speak German, you can't do the job. So it's kind of ignoring the fact that a lot of these migrants may have multiple language skills, which might be just as valuable as the German one. So the issue is the value we place on the different language skills. And certainly I have no problem with a model which is German plus. I mean, the EU model really is every citizen should speak their mother tongue plus two more. So it's the idea that in the world of the 21st century, we should all be able to speak several languages as a matter of routine. But the implication in the Austrian model is that without German, you are deficient, regardless of how many languages you speak.
Hmm. Well, perhaps my line of questioning, to be perfectly honest, is informed by my own background here a little bit, because, you know, I am the child of immigrants to America.
Yeah.
And my family was really, at the time, so focused on assimilation.
Yes.
That in our household, they spoke exclusively English. There was this idea that in order to fully become part of the culture that you were coming to, that you couldn't do that without being able to speak with your neighbors, without being able to communicate not only, you know, your needs, but who you are. That it was the best way to be not an other in the country that you were adopting.
Yes, and I mean, even though I am an immigrant now because I'm Ireland living in Scotland, but I mean, my background would be the same. I mean, I lived in a country where during the famine, a lot of people gave up the Irish language and learned English in order to become part of the empire. And the idea, again, was one language. There was somehow the notion that if you speak two languages, you will speak neither of them correctly. So you better better drop your native one in order to learn the other one. So I think a lot of people reacted to the idea that if they wanted to belong, they needed to speak the majority language only, rather than speaking the majority language along with the other languages. So somehow the language becomes the yardstick or the marker of your assimilation. And I think also, just on the word of assimilation, I mean, in the old days we talked about assimilation where everybody blended into the main culture. And then with politically correct language, we started talking about integration rather than assimilation, the idea that we would have more of a mixture going on. But really, we're back to the assimilation model now, I think.
Isn't a secondary concern or a secondary issue here sort of the long-term effects, not on the nation so much, but on the immigrants to that nation and their lives, the long-term effects of being linguistically isolated?
Yes, and I mean, I think that is true. I mean, there's an instrumental argument here which says that really, in order to connect, people need to speak the host language or the majority language. The issue is, though, of course, that if they use the language with which they came, it's perceived somehow as threatening or as not belonging or not wanting to belong, more significantly.
Is there a way that you imagine that a government could encourage language integration without stigmatizing the immigrants? Because I think that's sort of the pushback here.
It is, yeah.
What's happening in Austria?
Yes, it is. I mean, there are some good examples happening now where countries are thinking about, in inverted commas, teaching the migrants the language of the country in a new way where it's much more of an equal partnership. So what is going on is one person teaching the migrant the language, but then the migrant also teaching back something about their own culture. To give an example of that, one scheme is a gardening scheme in Germany, where they call it something like putting your roots down. And basically, migrants and locals garden together. And in the gardening together, they get to know one another. Migrants have an opportunity to plant plants from their own country. So there's an exchange of information and ideas about plants, etc. And then they also cook and eat together. And that's a very different model from the image we have of the local or the native in front of the classroom teaching a bundle of migrants the language they need to learn in order to get jobs. So I think that kind of blended model or blurred model, as I'd call it, is a much better way of dealing with things. While it's a question of getting them to learn German, it's also a question of how can Germany best use the languages they bring with them for the benefit of the country as a whole. But another example would be my home country, Ireland. We have a scheme called Foilte, which means welcome. And in that scheme, they take older people who have perhaps retired, but who are still very active, etc. And they pair up older people with migrants to mutually learn from one another. So again, it's not one informing the other. It's a mutual companionship. And again, seeking to help the migrant, but also help the local people understand the migrant as well, because a lot of the fear that goes on is fear of the unknown rather than fear of what they actually know.
Well, I wonder if we could just take a step back here for a moment and talk about what it is about language that is so powerful in defining groups, and in this case, perhaps in opposition to one another. I mean, why is language so critical to how we perceive who is one of us versus not?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think, you know, for a lot of people, language isn't critical. For most of us, we wake up in the morning, we don't think about the language we're going to speak today, and we don't think about the implications of that language. It's when there's a problem arises that suddenly the language becomes critical. So maybe when we see a lot of migrants coming in and hear different languages, we feel threatened. Or maybe, you know, if a language is dying out, it suddenly becomes very important. So, I mean, I think in a way, language has become routine. Habitus is what somebody called it. And we just don't think about it. But if you're in a place where your language isn't allowed or where you're being encouraged to speak a different language, then it suddenly becomes really, really important. And I think it's because communication is a vital part of life. I mean, our lives, our stories, and we tell our stories through language. And those stories that we carry in our language are not just our own stories, but they're our family stories, our histories, and our communal stories and our nation stories as well. So they're all passed on through language.
Right.
So I think that's why it's so important.
I mean, just to circle back to where we started, because this is such a thorny issue. I mean, do you think that migrants or immigrants to new countries, if they don't end up learning the dominant language of the nation that they're coming into over a period of years, decades even, and I'm not saying that they have to speak it exclusively, but if they don't acquire that language, aren't they at a long-term disadvantage?
Well, it means that I think they are, because it means they are dependent on someone else, unless the services are provided in their language. I mean, a lot will depend, for example, on whether you're in a country that offers services in many languages or just the one. But if you're in a monolingual country or a largely monolingual country and you don't speak the language, then you are dependent on somebody else to apply for your passport, to go to the post office, to do your shopping. And I think that is not a good situation to be in. So I think there are very valid reasons for asking migrants to learn the language of the host country. My argument would be just that there must be room for more than one language.
Well, Mairead Nickrath is an anthropologist and chair in European culture and heritage at Heriot-Watt University in Edinburgh. Many thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.